Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 30th, 2019. Thousands of South Sudanese are missing because of conflict. And a South Sudanese man who spoke to the media has been arrested in Gok State.
Now people are fearing to go and even beat me. Because one is beating, after you go, they will just beat him. After every beating, then you go and beat him, they beat him, just like that. And every morning, they beat him. That one lunch every morning.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Today is the International Day of Missing Persons. The International Committee of the Red Cross says more than 4,000 South Sudanese are missing because they were forced to flee fighting in the country. The ICRC's head of delegation in South Sudan says each missing person represents a family who is searching and living in the agony of not knowing what happened to their loved ones. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
30-year-old Alice Dagula traveled with her husband, a soldier from Kapoeta, to Juba on a military mission. Speaking in Arabic, Dagula says she has reached out to several people in the area in hopes of finding her brother, but nothing has turned up.
I am looking for my brother. His name is Marcelio Okok. Since 2013, we have separated with him in Juba here. He is a soldier. That time they had taken him to Mapel, and until today I'm looking for him, and his wife, and the children. I called the people in Wau, and they told me since the soldiers were taken, no one knows where they are because people don't use phones. They are in the bush.
Joyce Tabu, a mother of four, is now taking care of her uncle's five children after he went missing in 2014. Tabu says her uncle, a trader, was traveling to Khartoum through Wau to bring goods for sale, but suddenly his phones were not reachable. She says since then, she never heard from him again. Speaking in Arabic, Tabu, who is now a widow, says she faces daily challenges taking care of her uncle's children and her own.
The problem that I got after his disappearance, my husband also died, and I have remained with my uncle's children and my children. Now I am staying under the responsibility of the UN. The UN is the one helping me with food and things like money and school fees. I cannot manage to get them, and now all the children are staying at home because I cannot afford.
James Reynold, head of the ICRC delegation in South Sudan, says the organization has reunited some missing people with their families, but there are many who are still searching for their loved ones.
I've collected 4,225 tracing requests from families, directly from families who approach us. This year alone, we have registered 451 cases. Of these, it's been possible to locate 181 individuals who've now been reunited, put back in touch with their families.
Reynolds says under international law, the states are supposed to prevent people from going missing. But if they do go missing, the state has the responsibility to clarify the fate and whereabouts of those who have gone missing.
The ICRC advocates for legal frameworks and mechanisms for missing persons and for support to families of the missing. We build the capacities of the national authorities to respond to the issue through proper training and on the proper and dignified management of the dead.
John Labo, Secretary General of South Sudan Red Cross, says the organization usually provides forms to those looking for missing family members and collects photos of the missing, then shares that information with its branch offices across the country to help search for the missing people.
In the process of reunifying people that are separated, and that is done either by the use of phone calls, the use of what we call the tracing messages or the Red Cross messages, or by talking to communities at the various levels if at all they have a knowledge of somebody who might have gone missing.
Labba says when the Red Cross fails to trace a missing person within South Sudan, it works with Red Cross branches in other countries in the hope that the person might have turned up in neighboring countries. Gatwech Peter Kolang, Undersecretary in South Sudan's Humanitarian Affairs Ministry, urges the ICRC and the South Sudan Red Cross to provide psychological support to relatives of the families searching for loved ones.
Tracing and unifying missing persons and enabling them to restore and maintain contact with their families should go beyond targeting missing persons, but also to their families who are equally going through difficult situations.
International Day of Missing Persons is commemorated every year to recognize the thousands of people missing through conflict, disaster and migration, and to show solidarity to those who lost their loved ones. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Authorities in Gok State are detaining a man for speaking to the media about the death of his brother Peter Marial, a teacher who was killed in early August. Chol Agot was detained nearly a week ago, but has not been charged with a crime. Agot's cousin alleged that Gok authorities have beaten Agot while in custody. Lasuba Memo has the story for VOA from Juba.
Chol Agot's late brother Peter Marial was killed while on his way to a trading center. After he was killed on August 5th, Agot criticized state authorities on VOA for failing to apprehend Marial's killers. James Arun Deng, Agot's cousin, says Gok authorities arrested Agot hours after he spoke to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus program about the death of his brother Peter Marial.
Saying you have talked illegally with the Voice of America, so he is in prison. They have killed him completely and they are beating him every morning. They just want him to be in that situation.
Deng says his cousin has yet to be arraigned in court since being detained. He says family members have stopped visiting Agot in Choibe town, where he is under police custody, and police have physically abused him shortly after their visits.
Now people are fearing to go and even beat him, because one beat him, after you go, they will just beat him. After every beating that you go and give to him, they beat him, just like that. And every morning, they beat him. That one lunch every morning. He not even say anything about the government, only reported the death of his brother.
Gokki State Information Minister John Madol admits state authorities arrested Agot, but denies Agot is being detained for speaking to the VOA.
That is a lie, not Voice of America. He's down in Juba. Yes. And the guy was a policeman. That is why, because police people, police personnel, and the army are not allowed to talk to media without authorization. So that is the issue. But that allegation is not true. That he spoke to Voice of America? No.
Minister Madol says Agot is a policeman and is being detained for defying an order not to speak to the media without authorization from police supervisors. Mary Ajith, chairperson of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, says Gokki State authorities violated Agot's right to freedom of expression enshrined in South Sudan Transitional Constitution. He says authorities should bring Marial's killers to justice rather than detaining and beating his relative for speaking out.
Instead, they would have investigated the case, and if it is found out that it is true, the people who did that would have been apprehended and brought to book. We should face justice. But now, instead, it is the person who gets the information whose right is being violated.
South Sudan's transitional constitution states that anyone arrested on suspicion of committing a crime must be charged in a court of law within 24 hours. Minister Madol told VOA that Agot was arrested by soldiers with the South Sudan Army, not the police. He says official in charge of defense forces in Gokki State is currently in a neighboring state and not available for comment. When contacted for a comment, the Army spokesperson, Major General Lul Rai Kong, says he's not aware of the detention. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Several groups of young men and women in Juba say renewed fighting in parts of the country is hampering the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. At a news conference in Juba today, a youth group representative urge young people across the country to avoid violence. They also say South Sudan's leaders have failed to popularize the peace deal among citizens with only a few months to go before the November deadline. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Activists with the youth groups say a recent wave of fighting between government forces and rebels loyal to former Army Chief of Staff Paul Malong, which erupted after the parties to the agreement met in Ethiopia recently, is worrying. Daniel Mwaka, executive director for the Juba-based youth empowerment organization, says resorting to violence will negatively impact the peace process.
We all heard about people being killed along Ye Road, Mundri Road, and around Lowestead. We heard about fighting there in different parts of the country. But all we can say is we urge all the parties to the conflict to adhere to the ceasefire and make sure that they try to hold that, because this is the only chance that we have as South Sudanese. And again, those who are not part of the peace agreement, these other groups who did not sign, we request them to come to the negotiating table.
Mwaka is calling on regional bloc IGAD to come up with a strategy to move the peace process forward, and points out there is increasing mistrust among the parties who signed the September 2018 peace deal.
They have to be transparent to the citizens. We should know, as a citizen, should know what are they talking about. And also, people are talking about resources. The government is saying we don't have money for cantonment sites, we don't have this and that. So we also request the government to put that money for the cantonment sites so that all the soldiers will move to the cantonment sites and government soldiers move to the barracks. The IOs and other forces move to the cantonment sites. So this is one of the things that if this is not implemented, that the trust issues, the transparency and the resources, we need it to be in place. If it's in place, I'm sure the peace process will always move forward.
Soro Wilson, who works with the National Youth Dialogue Platform, says the nation's youth are fed up.
We have tried violence, and it has not really resolved our issues. The only thing that we have is now the agreement. And the agreement is where we can all bring in our grievances. Let us take responsibility and engage in the peace process.
Wilson says so far, youth have participated only minimally in the peace process. He says many citizens still feel the peace agreement has had no impact on their lives.
The agreement is left to the what? To the partners. And this has given them a stubborn kind of understanding that they are the owners of this agreement. But citizens need to own this agreement. How do they own this agreement? By having this kind of spaces. By speaking out about the agreement. This is where we can find that this agreement is going to be implemented.
Maker Ajak, program director of the Impact Action Organization, says politicians see youth as citizens who don't love the country.
That one we need to discourage. We need to tell youth, you need to be close to your elders. They are your parents. Talk to them, whatever you don't want. And then let's build this country. We are the legacy of this youth. They have done their part. It is our part to advocate for peace, for us to coexist.
Youth leaders say if young people are not given a seat at the table, the fighting is likely to continue. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a secondary school in Juba run by Mandela Fellow gives hundreds of kids free education. We'll bring details on that story right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
why do you care about your physical appearance?
People treat you the way you project yourself. So if you project yourself to be a riffraff, you'll be treated like one. If you project yourself to be somebody who has relevance, you'll be treated as one also.
So image is everything. Before you talk to someone, you see them. So what you see is what you perceive.
Physical appearance counts much. It's the first impression about who you are. So if I don't handle myself well, people might have a wrong impression of who I really am.
Your physical appearance, you know, sells you as a person in the job market, one, and in your society, basically.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A Mandela Washington Fellow has been providing free education to kids in Juba since 2016. Jock Abraham, who runs the Promised Land Secondary School, says more than 800 students attend the school in Gumbo Shirikat, a suburb of Juba town. Jock tells VOA's intern David Monodanga he collaborated with American filmmaker Gail Prinske to produce documentary film entitled Bullets to Books, a project aimed at inspiring young South Sudanese to believe in themselves and resist engaging in conflict.
When I came back from Uganda, when I grew up and finished my high school in Uganda, so when I came back to the country, I went for higher education. When the conflict happened in South Sudan, it just came along with what I was thinking about my life in the refugee camp because of the difficult life I went through. So the bullet to book was like changing mindset of the people from bullet to book so that the young people will focus on education, not to solve problems through violence and gang. I came up with the idea bullet to book as a main focus of the school, and this is why I established the school, because I want to change the mindset of the young people, the young generation.
You once said illiteracy is tearing South Sudan apart. What did you mean by that?
I'm trying to talk about the youth involvement in conflict. And when you see the number of youth in the conflict, and when you see the fuel, the energy they have in the conflict, take for example the tribal conflict and the child abduction that is happening. Most of the people who are doing this are the young people. And when I talk about illiteracy tearing the country apart, those crimes are not committed by educated people. Most of the educated people think about development. And when you look at the South Sudan youth, 70% of the population is illiterate. And this is why the rampant crime and conflict is too much compared to other countries around the world and our neighbors.
Paying tuition in South Sudan is a heavy burden to parents and students. How are you addressing this issue using your program?
You know, my school is so unique in a way that I'm not looking at the business perspective, but I'm looking at the way of building a country. And I'm also asking myself, what is my contribution to the nation development? So the school is not a business. The school is a free and open school to the displaced children. And I've been the one supporting the school to buy the basic need, like the chalks for school or teachers to use. And now I'm also using my own support to help them have some other skills, like there's a soft, liquid soap training that is also ongoing in the school. I'm trying to teach them some skills that when they finish the school, they go and do something for themselves. So if you see, our school is really unique, and there's nothing progressively done in the school like development, because I'm not generating income.
Jock, when you say it's not a business school, what do you mean exactly?
There are schools in Juba that generate money. They pay school fees heavily, like they can pay $200, they can pay $100, which some parents cannot afford. And when I started the school in 2016, what we did was get registration fee so that the student can register, and we use that money to help in buying some other things. But looking at the people that I'm serving, are they really vulnerable students that cannot afford if you have to make it a business school? And they will be involved in another crime because they'll drop out definitely. So I'm trying to keep them in school and keep moving. And by grace and by commitment, we'll find support and make the school bigger to have bigger population.
The government released its budget, its annual budget recently. What do you think of that?
You know, reading the statement of the Minister of Education, it really shows that there is not much consideration to the education sector. If you look at the government schools, mostly they are the least performing schools in the country. And that is because most of the teachers now go for private schools where they can get something for a living. The budget has not even reached 10%. And that is really, very poor. Like, there's no hope. So the call could be like what the minister was saying, so that the budget can be increased, so that the ministry can deliver more services to the people who are in need and build more schools like some other places.
That was Jock Abraham, founder of the Promised Land Secondary School. He was speaking to VOA intern David Mono Danga from Juba. The reciprocal exchange component of the Mandela Fellowship allows Americans to travel to Africa to build strategic partnership developed during the Mandela Fellowship here in the United States. The State Department brings young men and women from Africa through the Washington Mandela Fellowship every year to gain skills in various fields at institutions across the United States. David Mono Danga, a journalist with Juba Monitor, is a Mandela Fellow. He spent 1 month interning here with us at the South Sudan in Focus and is with me in the studio to talk about his experience in U.S. and at VOA. David, welcome to this live show on your last day.
Thank you so much for having me, John Tanza.
How would you describe your experience in the United States?
Wow, that is a very wide question. First of all, I went to Indiana University and spent 6 weeks there with a lot of lovely people, both from the institute and the communities. It has been so wonderful to me, learning from people, the Americans, and also telling them our stories from South Sudan and other parts of Africa.
And what did you learn? You said it's wonderful learning from people. What did you learn exactly?
Well, one thing that I learned is diversity. Here in the U.S., people embrace diversity so much that they tend to go about everything successfully, putting aside their diverse differences. So this is something that I think will help South Sudan a lot, because we have a lot of tribal issues that if we put aside and take people for who they are instead of which tribe they come from, we will benefit.
And how are you going to use this knowledge when you go back home? How are you going to use what you have learned here?
As you mentioned before, I am a journalist from the Juba Monitor newspaper. That is going to be the first place where I will be implementing this change. And I also intend to work and collaborate a lot with colleagues from the media and other civil society organizations to ensure that we make our country a better place for everyone.
And working as a journalist in South Sudan comes with a price. How are you going to navigate the harsh environment where intimidation and harassment are the order of the day?
It's true. Working in South Sudan is a very risky environment, given the statistics previously on how journalists are treated. But I think through this, we can still make it, because it is not only in South Sudan that this journalists are facing such issues. We have seen it here in the U.S. It is all over Africa, some parts of Asia. I believe with hard work and unity, collaborations, we can make the government understand that we are just doing our work. We are not enemies.
David, if you were asked to speak to potential fellows who are coming for this program, what would you tell them?
I will tell them that there is a saying that I learned from my institute. If you think that you are too small to make a change, you have not spent a night with mosquitoes. We should not undermine ourselves.
And there are a lot of mosquitoes in Juba.
Yeah, whoa. Thousands of them, millions, I should say. So people normally look down on themselves, and I was a victim of this, but now I realize that I have the potential to make a change, to inspire people, the change doesn't have to come through you, but you can make someone realize a change.
That's a great goal, David. Thank you very much for being with us here for 1 month.
Thank you so much for having me.
We wish you all the best as you go back to South Sudan. That's David Mono Danga, a journalist with Juba Monitor, who has been an intern with us here at the South Sudan in Focus. It's time to read a few of the comments we received this week on our WhatsApp line about stories you've heard on this show. Jurugo Peter in Juba, Gudele writes, "I like VOA News so much because it enlightens us with what is taking place in South Sudan. My regards goes out to all the correspondents of VOA News. Keep updating us with what is going on in South Sudan." Mor Kot Garang from Juba writes, "Thanks to the Turkish government for giving the deprived young South Sudanese a chance to study in Turkey. It's an opportunity that has been denied to many." Another listener, James Roy Majokin Bantu, writes, "I'm really excited with yesterday's VOA News program for South Sudan. The program was presented by VOA News editor John Tanza, and it was very successful and presents good initiatives to all of us South Sudanese listeners across the country." Iguya Stephen from Rumbek Market writes, "I request the management of VOA to give us spots." Stephen, we will look into that. A listener in Ikoto who did not want to give his name writes, "I am not happy with what the government of Torit State had done by bringing in someone who was sacked from the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry after embezzling our money. My question remains, what are we doing to move South Sudan out of corruption? And why do we keep bringing in people who are good in corruption? Does it mean they are the only capable persons in the state? God have mercy on South Sudan," he writes. Richard Olwen in Juba writes, "The Ghanaian man who was trying to put things in order was fired by a mayor minister. They know if things are put straight, they will not steal. South Sudanese don't want anything good for their country. This man was paid by UNDP, including his accommodation. How was he a burden to the government?" Magai Majok in Bor writes, "The National HIV/AIDS Commission in South Sudan should increase its effort by reaching the people at the grassroots level. The local people don't know exactly what is HIV. Therefore, I'm urging the commission to extend its services to the people by giving information in terms of drama, songs, poems in local languages for easy understanding." Taban Thomas from Toronto, Canada writes, "I am a frequent listener of your program. I appreciate your informative news out of South Sudan and Africa in general. Keep up the good work." Another listener writes, "I'm Charles. I want to know why VOA is not on air in Nimule." Charles, I have no answer for you, but you can get VOA on a shortwave. And finally, a listener who did not provide his name writes, "The government of Gok State has arrested Mr. James Chol Agoth because he answered a call by your media house earlier this month about the killing of a teacher, Marielle Agany, in Choabet. Thanks for your comments, please. Send us your comments, keep them short, and let us know where you are writing from." I must say this week has been one of my difficult weeks. I lost a friend in Juba who has been a very close listener of VOA. Jimmy Onyokolang died this week and he was laid to rest today in Torit. We will dedicate this song, Nani Ongere, by Colonel Mido to this VOA listener who died in Juba. Nani Ongere.
Monyomi jinga yara ego nanie anivuni aurwe anivuni aurwe monyomi jinga yara ego nanie monyomi jinga yara ego nanie anivuni aurwe anevuni aurwe nani olotir nani olongere mama nani olotir nani olongere mama nani olotir nani olongere nani olotir nani olongere.
We've been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Nani Ongere. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a peaceful weekend And join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Nani olo tir, nani olo ngere.